Oh, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Friday, July 3rd, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adioye Jr. Joining me is the host of PS I Love You XOXO, Greg Miller.
Hey, Blessing, how are you this day? Thank you, Kevin. It's always nice to guest on this show.
Greg, thanks for coming through. We appreciate you gracing us with your presence.
Hey, man, I was able to get it into the schedule. No big deal. Just a, you know, big time internet person over here.
Greg, today's Friday. What are you playing this weekend?
Ghost of Tsushima, of course. I can't tell you if it's good or bad, but I can tell you that we are playing it for review. And yeah, I'm going to be playing that nonstop probably.
Mm-hmm. You? Any other? I'm also going to be playing Ghost of Tsushima. I got to catch up on Iron Man. Now that that's actually out, we can talk about it all we want. We talked about it yesterday.
Sure.
But I'm still very early in that game, still trying to figure out. Dude, you got the thing. You got the thing.
That's game, I'm ready, man. Game provided by PlayStation. They sent it to us.
I don't need the feds. You want me to get it? I got it somewhere.
Oh, you got it somewhere? Just eat your bagel, Kevin. It's Friday. Enjoy yourself.
Just lay back. It's Friday.
You guys just talked to me once about like how this fucking show is going
to
run.
Kevin, here's what I want you to do. Take your bagel and wipe some of the cream cheese on your feet and then turn them to Cecil and let them look away.
No,
Kevin, I don't know if you realize this. 95% of the show is on the fly. And so I didn't know I was going to talk about IMA VR until those words came out of my mouth.
Exactly. Smart man over here.
There you go. I got it.
He did it. Well, that's Last of Us Part 2, Kevin.
Same thing.
Close enough.
Greg, enough about Last of Us Part 2 and Iron Man VR. Let's get into our story today.
Wait, how far are you going to play in Iron Man VR, you think? Here's what I like to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I see something, I say something. You're not going to play Iron Man VR this weekend.
I'm going to try very hard.
You gave your impressions. Your first impressions. You're like, oh, the first two missions didn't really do it for me. So, you know,
but,
whatever.
Like, here's the thing. I think there's a chance that if I play more, it might grow on me more. And if that chance is out there, I want to take it because we're going to have the conversation on Monday.
PS I Love You. I'm going to review it.
Miller.
PS I Love You XOXO.
Can I give him the stamp of old foginess?
Sure.
There you go.
There it is. Stamped old fogey.
Which show is that from?
It's got to be a KFAF thing, right?
Is that a KFAF thing or is that like an Internet Explorers?
Internet Explorers, but we haven't done it. Corey sent it to
what
us.
Else do you what do you what else do you got
well, yeah, what are there what other what graphics do you have for other shows that we can apply to this show? effect. I haven't seen that in months.
I just entered brought those in, that's why.
Beautiful, I love it a lot.
Dude,
all right,
that's,
cool.
That's really exciting. Okay, well, enough about Nick's old fogey graphic and cool Greg's cool Greg effect. Greg, let's talk about Evo getting canceled, big things popping off at Ubisoft, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live, right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, at the patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, we're back streaming Predator Hunting Grounds on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. That's happening from 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific time.
And today's the day. It's the definitive stream. Yesterday, I shit the bed as Predator, and I've been Predator number one for this company since we started doing Predator streams. I've been amazing.
I feel like we've not been keeping an accurate track of like who's been the actual good Predator here, because I feel like I've been
inarguably I've been the best Predator in the company.
Real quick, I just want to shout outs to Cameron Kennedy. Cameron Kennedy make those graphics.
Thank you, Kev. Inarguably, I've been the number one Predator in this company, but yesterday I was terrible, and Blessing, you did pull ahead with a performance, and we agreed that yesterday on stream today would be the stream where we would decide who is the number one Predator in the company, you or me. So I'm excited to see you come out there and play some today.
I'm excited to show
you. Trying to run away.
Yeah, that's why he's trying to run away. If you didn't know already, behind the scenes, Blessing was like, I gotta do some stuff and catch up on some work. I don't know if I can stream Predator today.
I'm like, sounds like a coward. It's been a very busy week. It's been my birthday. Got a whole lot of things going on. I was on a lot of Pierce's podcasts on Wednesday, and like, listen, I'm I'm in high demand right now. Greg, I don't know if you know what it's like when people just want you to be on their shows and people want you to play their games and people you know, want you to participate in their activities because you're the talk of the town. You're the person that everybody wants to have on their content.
For the record, that's I do know what that's like because 2015 was a big year for me.
Oh, wow, 2015. Man, what a year. What a year. This is the same year that Witcher 3 came out. And that was the same year for a lot of outlets that year. I don't know if you won any awards that year.
I did, yeah. No, I won one, and then I won one the next year at South by 2.
Oh.
Everybody forgets the South by 1. Because South by is a weird thing to win an award. That was also Gamer of the Year or whatever. I don't know. It's on the shelf at work.
It's pretty cool. That Predator Hunting Ground stream, of course, is sponsored by our friends at Ilphonic. So show up, have fun, do all that good stuff. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Mohammed, Momo, Blackjack, or Mohammed and Blackjack. I guess we have new Patreon producers because it's a new month. It is a new month, July 3rd. Today, we're brought to you by Brooklinen, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 7 stories today.
Baker's Dozen.
Ooh, like that, Kermit the Frog here.
Starting with our number one, Evo has been canceled. This is John Porter at The Verge. Fighting game tournament organizer Evo has been canceled, has canceled Evo online and removed its co-founder and president from the company after serious allegations surfaced about his past behavior. The long-running esports event had previously been scheduled to take place in a new online-only format starting July 4th due to the coronavirus pandemic. The announcement of the event's cancellation comes less than 24 hours after fighting game player Mikey Crackpron Fam alleged that Queller had behaved inappropriately towards him and a number of other teenage boys in the 90s and early 2000s. Following the allegations, multiple companies pulled out of the event, including Capcom, NetherRealm, and Bandai Namco, as well as players and commentators, according to PC Gamer. This is Evo's statement. Over the past 24 hours, in response to serious allegations recently made public on Twitter, we have made the first of a series of important decisions regarding the future of the company. Effective immediately, Joey Queller will no longer be involved with Evo in any capacity. We currently are working towards his complete separation from the company and have relieved him of all his responsibilities. Going forward, Tony Cannon will act as CEO in this position. He will take a leadership role in prioritizing greater accountability across Evo, both internally and at our events. Progress doesn't happen overnight, or without the bravery of those who speak up against misconduct and injustice. We are shocked and saddened by these events, but we are listening and are committed to making every change that will be necessary in making Evo a better model for the stronger, safer culture we all seek. As a result, we'll be canceling Evo Online and we'll work to issue refunds for all players who chose to purchase a badge. We'll donate the equivalent of the proceeds as promised to Project Hope. Evo said they'll be issuing refunds to anyone who purchased a badge for Evo Online. I'm back to the article now. And that'll be making a donation to Project Hope equivalent to the proceeds from the event. Now, Greg, this was a huge thing that broke yesterday, pretty much, as all the different companies were posting their statements.
And if I can, like, it broke at the speed of light. Like, it was literally, like, we did the Predator Hunting Ground stream. I saw during it, somebody said something about one of the companies leaving. Then me, Jen, and Lucy took a walk. And when we came back from the walk, it was already, oh, shit, it was on Slack that Evo's been canceled. And behind that was the Namco cancelization. Behind that was the other company that pulled out. It was like, oh, fuck, like, this all happened like in a 30-minute period.
Yeah, exactly. It was like within the course of 30 minutes where everything kind of went down and Evo was pretty quickly canceled, which is huge, which is a crazy thing because if you didn't know, Evo is the biggest fighting game tournament that happens yearly. Evo is an event that I've been looking forward to attending and with coronavirus and all this different stuff, right? Like that all kind of derailed. But so many people in the fighting game community and within the different communities within the fighting game community look forward to Evo as the big event to kind of bring everybody together in Vegas for the year to face off and congregate and all these things. And so this is wild. This is wild, especially because Evo Online was supposed to start, I think, literally this weekend. Like, I think it was literally supposed to start tomorrow. And so for all this stuff to go down like this is pretty wild. And this also follows a number of allegations that have rocked the Smash Brothers community. And I'm going to pull from Brian Lawver at Screen Rant to get the breakdown of that. So Brian Lawver writes here, multiple prominent members of the competitive Super Smash Brothers community have been accused of sexual assault in several cases against minors. The accusations are just the latest in a wave that's been sweeping all corners of the games industry in recent weeks. The most recent round of accusations comes from young people involved in the Smash Brothers community, or Smash Brothers competitive scene, speaking up on Twitter, several of whom say they were assaulted by other members of the community while they were underage. Troy, Wells accused Cinnamon Senpai Dunson of assaulting him when he was 14 years old. Zach, Captain Zach Loth, accused Nairo Quizada of not only assaulting him at age 15, but also attempting to bribe him to keep quiet about the abuse. Richard Kaitaro King Jr. admitted to assaulting 16-year-old Shiva at a party after allegations surfaced. Caitlin KT Dominant Redeker accused D-Ron, D1 Maingret of assaulting her on her 18th birthday. The stories coming to light from the Super Smash Bros. Competitive community highlight the serious need for reform there and elsewhere in gaming. Event organizers and platform holders owe it to everyone in their community to create a space where abusers can no longer prey on vulnerable people and where those who have been victimized will be believed and protected. The Super Smash Bros. Community is by no means the only place where these reforms are needed, but as a space with so many underage members, organizers urgently need to do better to protect them and root out predators. And 100%. I think that last part of that write-up, I think, sums up this whole situation, especially with the Super Smash Brothers stuff, especially with how young that community is, like, in terms of the literal age of the community members. Like, that's... And as we've been seeing these stories come out in the industry over the last few weeks and over the last few years, but really over the last few weeks as it's these stories have come out in a broader way, this is a thing that I think we've all kind of realized has needed reform, and that is ridiculous and unacceptable in the way that these things are still happening. Matters of abuse, matters of sexual harassment, and matters of, I mean, literal rape that's going on in these communities. Yeah. You know, it's been a thing that we've realized is the problem. But I think this situation right here with what's going on in the Smash Brothers community is like even a bigger magnifying glass on. Yeah, this is such a problem that it's even a problem with minors here. Like, it's not just an adult problem.
I mean,
like, we're having problems across the board.
You figure it's an even bigger problem with minors, right? I think when you hear all these survivors coming out from different parts of, we'll say the games industry right now, obviously Me Too and a million other movements, but for what we're talking about, and we see it being the people that you may know on Twitter, personalities, you know, people working on the other side of games that are more just, you know, PR or marketing or whatever, making the games, right? And you see these, what I would say, full-blown adults, right, who are being pressured into these situations or didn't know what to do or didn't expect someone to turn on them that way. That's somebody who is an adult in their industry. Maybe they were just starting out, maybe whatever their specifics are. But again, we're back to talking about them being an adult. You talk about something like this now, where it is that you have a community, and I'm completely going off of this article, as everyone knows who follows Greg or whatever. The fighting game scene, Smash and Evo, is so not my wheelhouse. But for it to be described here as a young, skewing younger community, right, that you are all out playing Smash, that's where it's happening, how it's starting. Think about that as of being a kid and being put into these situations and being pressured, and how cool it is to see one of these people who you look up to, who are a big name to you or big name in the community. Again, I don't have a foot in that world, but to have them, you know, reach out to you, and you think it's going to be this Batman Robin kind of relationship, but then it turns into something so dark and sinister. Like, yeah, well, you can't expect. I mean, if we can see it happen to adults we know and people that we know, love, and respect so much, imagine being a kid and not knowing any better and not knowing what to do about it.
Yeah, and it's super upsetting to see the fighting game community and the Smash community in particular are communities that I'm not really, I'm like you, where I'm not too much ingrained. I have more of an interest in it. You know, I'm very much like a casual fighting game player and a casual fighting game fan, and so seeing this stuff kind of happen from the outside looking in has been shocking. And I've been seeing rumblings on like Twitter and Reddit and different places of people being like, oh yeah, this is crazy, but I've not really had the context for it. I've not really had the context to see how crazy it is. And so having it laid out here, seeing the statements from the company, seeing the organizer of Evo, right, like the person that leads Evo, be outed for you know, such hated such heinous things, right? It's messed up, it's upsetting, and of course these are issues that need to be addressed across the board through our industry and through a lot of different industries. But to see it reflect in this way, in this particular situation, in this particular community, It sucks. And I wish I had more to say. I wish I was more informed about like the fighting game community and who these people are and all these different things. But
To your point,
I think the thing we can all agree with is that it fucking sucks.
Of course. And not to belabor it, obviously, but it is that thing of even for me, like, I don't know shit about fighting games, right? But I know Evo. And I know how important Evo is, and I know how large Evo is, and I know how many of our friends look forward to going to Evo and playing in Evo and doing those things. I think that's what you're talking about here, where you see someone at the very top turn out to be an asshole, right? Be a horrible person. And then that is not only them being an asshole and fucking up a whole bunch of victims' lives, it's then them having their name attached to something that was a shining spot for so many people, was, you know, the thing they look forward to every year, and to see that now tarnished, and to see now that community wrestle with that, and to see now that domino out, and to see that, like, yeah, like you're saying, it was supposed to be this weekend. I'm sure a lot of people in, you know, you look at last week, and I'm sure a lot of people, as things have been bad and you're in self-quarantine and the Black Lives Matter movement, and then last week with the more sexual harassment stuff, I'm sure there were so many people who were like, this sucks. I'm looking forward to just getting to Evo, and then to have Evo canceled because of one guy, or not even one guy, I shouldn't say that, but the guy at the head of it, this Smash Brothers stuff. Like, don't get me wrong, this needs to happen. You need to clean out all the fucking assholes and creeps in the fucking world. But I understand too that, like, there's these ramifications that are obviously the survivors and victims, then obviously the people who just want to be it. And then you do have these questions of, cool, they've removed the guy from Evo. Now, you know, Evo Online's canceled, but they're refunding all the money and all this different stuff. And it's back to the business side of it too, of what does that actually mean? Will Evo come back from this? Would it have a new name? Would it be blown up and reformed? Is it that they couldn't even pay their bills after this because they have to refund everybody their things?
That's
not that that's by any imagination is the biggest story, the biggest victim in this thing. Don't get me wrong. For sure. I'm not trying to paint it that way. But
I've been texting my friend Maria, who's also very into Evo, and we've been talking about like going to our first Evo and all this stuff. And that's the conversation I brought up to her yesterday when Evo got canceled. I was like, is Evo just done forever now? Because I honestly can't see them coming back from this. Like, I think for them to come, and who knows where we'll be a year from now. Maybe,
of course,
you know, cutting off that dude from the company and building that goodwill over the year might help them return in a way that works for them. But I wouldn't be surprised to see some other fighting game tournament rise and become the number one fighting game tournament because people are sick of Evo, right? And the same way that we've seen with gaming forums or like other examples of things that have you know, got buried over controversy and other things rise up because of it. I think that's like the reset era situation.
Totally.
I could definitely see that happening. But that's going to be a kind of a wait and see thing.
Yeah.
Greg, let's talk about a little bit more lighter news. Story number two, Ubisoft has announced their new battle royale game, Hyperscape. This is Matt Perslow at IGN. Ubisoft has fully revealed Hyperscape, the FPS battle royale game that has been teased and partially leaked over the last few days. Hyperscape is a free-to-play first-person battle royale coming to PC, Xbox One, and PS4. Ubisoft have targeted a summer 2020 release, starting with a short closed technical test on PC that'll run July 2nd to July 7th, with more phases to follow in the build up to release. Set in a VR world called the Hyperscape, the game focuses on a sport called Crown Rush, in which 100 players split into squads of three. And to be more accurate, I'm pretty sure it's 99 players because 100 isn't divisible by three. So 99 players split into squads.
There's one team that's just one player.
This is one dude that's like, what the fuck, man? Why? I just want teammates. 99 players split into squads of three to compete for victory. Wins can be claimed in the usual last team standing manner or by claiming a crown objective in the final phase of the match and holding it for 45 seconds. Unlike most battle royales, Hyperscape's standout feature is that it takes place on an entirely urban map. This city, clearly influenced by Paris, is also littered with jump pads to allow for fast-paced vertical movement. Greg, Hyperscape is a thing that's kind of been slowly been revealed over the last week.
revealed.
Yeah, revealed. Leaked, and it's been one of those things where I don't think we've been able to kind of place it in like a news day because Monday it was a thing where it leaked, and then as it leaked, Ubisoft also created a Twitter account, and all these different things were kind of happening with it. I had played the game, so I couldn't really speak on it in a way that felt embargoes. Because of embargoes and stuff, I didn't want to break the embargo. But the game was officially revealed midday yesterday, and we can finally talk about it. We have a first impressions up over on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. It's like a 20-minute video of me and Andy talking about it. I played it. Andy had not played it. I think Andy might have played it by now. He streamed it last night. And I gave him all my impressions on the game. And it's basically a battle royale. It's basically like kind of like a new Apex Legends, but I'll say it's way more arena-based and way more fast-paced and way more Unreal Tournament-y.
Yeah, you talked about being vertical, right?
Yeah, it's a very vertical game. And so in the article, they mentioned jump pads. There's jump pads all over the place. You have different abilities, and there's like a teleport ability that allows you to basically like zoom like to where you want, and you can use that to kind of get higher ground. There's like a lot of rooftop a combat going on in the game. It's really cool. It is the most arena like battle royale game I've played.
Oh, okay.
And so youtube.com/kindoffunnygames,
you can listen to your feedback there.
Exactly. Yeah, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames if you want to watch the first impressions and see me kind of break it down over the course of 20 minutes.
I'd love to try it out, but I'm sorry, like Captain America's in Fortnite. All right. That's all I need. That's all I need, buddy. I got the skin, I got the shield, that's all I need. And I gotta unlock Aquaman still. I got a lot of stuff going on.
So I missed this whole thing. What's the deal with Captain America in Fortnite?
They added Captain America to Fortnite. You can buy Captain America skin.
Okay, so it's just a skin. It's not like an event that's going on. It's not like you can find a shield in the map and that changes.
No. It's not like the Avengers event they did. Instead, they had you buy the skin or whatever. In the trailer, though, when it does, it has the Bifrost. When he walks away, it's got the Bifrost on it, so people are thinking Thor's coming too. But I mean, like, think about it. This season, right now, you can start unlocking Aquaman because he's on the Battle Pass as well, and there's Aquaman challenges. Yeah, apparently. I don't know if you know this. It turns out that if you have money and a lot of it, all the other companies play nice. They don't give a shit. They don't give a flying fuck who's in what anymore. They're like, oh, our struggling comic book business? Yeah, Fortnite wants to give us a gajillion dollars? Go ahead. We don't care.
Greg, speaking of Ubisoft, story number three. Ubisoft is restructuring its editorial team. This is Rebecca Valentine at gamesindustry.biz. Ubisoft CEO Yves Guillemot has shared an internal letter to all employees that outlines actions the company will take in response to a recent wave of abuse allegations directed at multiple Ubisoft senior employees. In the letter, Guillemot begins by saying Ubisoft will revise the composition of its editorial team, which it recently restructured in January. This comes on the heels of accusations against two of the team members, Tommy Francois and Maxime Belland, who have reportedly been placed on administrative leave. To recap, because we talked about the editorial team very early in the year as they were structured at the original time. So to give a recap on what the editorial team is, I have an article from Andy Robinson at VGC who writes, "Two decades, the creative direction of Ubisoft's games and IPs has been overseen by the editorial team, a Paris-based group of around 100 designers and producers who advise on everything from game design to script writing. While they don't create games themselves, the team has a huge impact on the development teams across the company. Historically, editorial's influence has resulted in a cohesive vision across all Ubisoft titles, with learnings from one project feeding into the next. It was the editorial team that drove the company towards open-world and systemic games, pushed online elements, and insisted that its narratives had a thematic basis in the real world, but avoided taking a political stance." Greg, this is good news to see that they're restructuring the editorial team and making it more diverse. In that same VGC article where they talk about the original restructuring, they had like an image of the editorial team, and it seemed like it looked like the least diverse group of people that you could look at.
White dudes,
and like, you know, it's like Paris, I guess, like it being centered in Paris maybe has something to do with it. I don't know, but it was very not diverse. And so to see them kind of restructuring it is good news, especially for a team that is in charge of the creative direction across all the different projects. I feel like if you want any team to be diverse, it would be that team. Because like that's the team that's gonna be in charge of making sure
they're
that,
the top, right? They're making decisions that then trickle down, that then guide where the game and the company games and the company is going.
Exactly. And so like when you have a team like that that's responsible for creative direction and responsible for being the driving force of what's the next Far Cry game gonna look like and be, or not the driving force, but like one of the main voices in what's the next Far Cry game gonna be, what's the next Watch Dogs game gonna be. I think you wanted as many different varying mindsets and opinions and types of people in there as possible so that you can make sure you don't leave any stone unturned in making sure that those games end up varied and interesting and diverse.
Did you, and I know that obviously it's been breakneck week here in terms of reviews and events and first impressions and shows. Did you read the entire letter from Yves Guillemot that Rebecca references here?
No.
Ubisoft put it up yesterday. That's where I first heard about all this. I'm going to pull some things from it if you don't mind, because it's larger than just this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read the intro and then I'll start paraphrasing a bit, right? But over on news.ubisoft.com, they put up this post that says, "Change starts today." The following is an internal letter from Ubisoft CEO Yves Guillemot, shared with his teams earlier today. "Dear all, the situations that some of you have experienced or witnessed are absolutely not acceptable. No one should ever feel harassed or disrespected at work, and the types of inappropriate behavior we have recently learned about cannot and will not be tolerated. To those of you who have spoken up or have supported colleagues, I want to be clear. You are heard, and you are helping drive necessary change within the company. We have significant work to do to improve the ways in which we operate and collaborate, and I am personally committed to ensuring that we make these fundamental changes. They need to be profound, and we need to implement them quickly at all levels of the organization. Specifically, I have decided to revise the composition of the editorial department, transform our human resource processes, and improve the accountability of all managers on these subjects. We are not looking for a quick fix, but rather a structural shift at Ubisoft that fully aligns with our values. Values that we do not tolerate toxic behaviors, and where everyone feels safe to speak out. We must do everything we can to ensure no one is in these situations ever again. With this in mind, I am also putting in place a series of initiatives that will serve as a roadmap as we listen, learn, and act. I will need everyone to work together to build and implement them, so that respect for others remains one of the pillars of Ubisoft's culture." So then his bullet point things that have descriptors here, I'm just going to read the bullet points though, right? Appointment of a head of workplace culture, employee listening sessions at all locations, launch a global employee survey, ongoing investigations into allegations, comprehensive review and of policies and procedures, diversity and inclusion. So all of those have longer things written to them or whatever. But again, as you pointed out, right, on the heels of both, you know, as Rebecca wrote, right, this comes on the heels of accusations against two of the editorial team members, Tommy and Maxime, who have reportedly been placed on administrative leave. Remember, there was also all sorts of people, I think, way down the totem pole, including PR, including influencer relations, there's a whole bunch of people who have been named.
Ashraf, the creative lead of
Ashraf, I forgot all about. Yeah, who stepped down from Assassin's Creed, right? Like, there's a lot going on that was rocking the boat at Ubisoft as all these allegations came in, and I think people had been looking for something from them. I saw, I don't want to say public opinion sway really quick, but it was all of a sudden like, man, shit, fuck, is Ubisoft really fucked up? Is it, especially, you know, being the editorial department, being people at the top of the company, that, and then it was trickling down kind of thing. I thought this was a well-structured letter from Yves. Obviously, all this, everything in these situations is all talk until it's executed upon. But I thought, you know, we're talking about blowing up the editorial team, making it more diverse. That's a great step. I think, you know, admitting that you have this, being there, the listening stations, all good stuff.
Yeah, and hearing them talk about restructuring things and making sure that they're able to kind of break down the systems that are allowing all these unfortunate situations to take place, those are the things that I think I like to hear. So that's all good stuff there. It all from Ubisoft is kind of, it's been interesting for me to see, because I think before all this, I kind of looked at Ubisoft as the company that's doing it right. Like, I looked at Ubisoft as like, oh, like, you know, we all hate on EA, we all hate on Activision, we all hate on these other companies. Ubisoft, they're the guys that are like, that have their shit together. They're the guys that seem to be doing all those things right. And honestly, I think for me, this has been kind of an eye-opening example of, no, man, this stuff can happen everywhere. This stuff can happen anywhere. This stuff can go down even at the places where you think, you know, shit is together.
Yeah.
Like, this stuff can be systemic when you don't even realize it.
I'd like to think the main takeaway from all of this, and it won't be for everybody, but in general, to your point, is that the fact of the matter here is that no matter what the company, no matter what they're doing, it's run by and staffed by humans. And that inevitably means that the humans are going to fuck up at times. and be, and they're going to be terrible humans at times, because obviously I'll be very clear, that's not sexually assaulting someone isn't, oh man, I fucked up. No, you're a piece of shit. But you understand what I'm saying, that like bad things are going to happen. And I think that it's so quick to turn on it and be like, oh right, this company's doing it right, but this company sucks. When in reality, people who suck are at both companies, period. And it's that thing of, it's up to the people who don't suck to figure out a way to make it safe for people who don't suck to work there and get rid of the people who suck when they out themselves as sucking. Because no matter what, you can hire somebody and bring somebody into your team and think they're great, and then find out down the line, oh my God, you're a piece of fucking shit. And you have to be able to make the moves, right? That's what I think people are always crying out for when you look at like the Riot situation, right? It's the fact that, oh my God, you're a fucking piece of shit, but you're high up in the company, so all right, take a 6 month leave, you know, whatever, go and do this thing and then come back and don't do it again kind of shit. That's when people are like, what the fuck? It's when you actually take action, right? And you actually move on things that matter.
Exactly. Greg, let's keep talking about publishers. Story number four. My favorite topic, publishers. Other publishers are considering raising their game prices for PS5 and Xbox Series X. This is Chris Ridgering at gamesindustry.biz. Other game publishers are considering raising their prices of games the PS5 and Xbox Series X, says games research firm IDG Consulting. It follows the news that NBA 2K21, which you talked about yesterday, will be priced at $70 on the next-gen consoles. $10 more expensive than it is on the current devices. Speaking with gamesindustry.biz, IDG president and CEO Yoshio Osaki says that game pricing has remained flat since 2005, whereas TV and movie pricing has increased significantly. Quote, the last time that next-gen launch software pricing went up was in 2005 and 2006, when it went from $49.99 to $59.99, and these are US dollars. At the start of the Xbox 360 and the PS3 generation, he says. During that time, the costs and prices in other affiliated verticals have gone up, end quote. Osaki says that next-gen console game production costs have increased by 200%, to 300%, depending on the IP, studio, and genre, but the prices have remained at $59.99. Meanwhile, cinema ticket prices have risen 39%, Netflix subscription costs have gone up 100%, and cable TV packages have risen 105%. Quote, even with the increases to $69.99 for next-gen, that price increase from 2005 to 2020 next-gen is only up 17%, far lower than the other comparisons. While the cost of development and publishing have gone up, and pricing in other entertainment verticals have also gone up substantially, next-gen software pricing has not reflected these increases. $59.99 to $69.99 does not even cover these other cost increases completely, but does move it more in the proper direction. He continues, quote, IDG works with all major game publishers, and our channel checks indicate that other publishers are also exploring moving their next-gen pricing up on certain franchises for the same reasons outlined above. Quote, not every game should garner the $69.99 price point on next-gen, but flagship AAAs such as NBA 2K merit this pricing more than others, end quote. Greg,
yeah.
How do you react to this information that it seems over the years video game pricing has not gone up as much as it should have comparatively to other types of entertainment?
I mean, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, right? But I agree. I think that this is, again, one of those, you know, this is the tough pill to swallow meme, right? Of like, yes, this is the dollars and cents of the video game industry that, yeah, as they point out here, it was that PS3 360 generation where we saw $49.99 to $59.99. And it made sense. And then it hasn't moved, yeah, in 14 years, right? Or whatever. Like, yes, games cost more, teams are bigger, games take longer, there's a million different things going on. If you know, it's that whole thing of like, even, and this is maybe a dumb example, but maybe it's not, I don't know, but you think of like Gustavo's score for The Last of Us, right? And how incredible and amazing that is. I beat Iron Man VR and I sat through the credits and it pops up with, I'm blanking on it, but one of the Philharmonics, I want to say maybe the Polish one, they had an actual, like, for this game, for Iron Man VR, an orchestral soundtrack that they hired you know what I mean? Like, there are all these parts that we want in a video game to make video games feel like these, not every game, big games, you know, that we want them to feel these, you know, huge momentous occasions. And that is a thing that costs money. And I do understand what they're talking about here. And I understand that I'm always labeled when we have these kind of conversations as the pro corporation guy, but it isn't that. It's the, I think I'm the pro reality guy of like what it actually costs to make a AAA game and get where you want it to be and what that means. Because I think when you talk about, oh yeah, you know, Last of Us Part Two is this amazing game and Naughty Dog's this, you know, few hundred people that are making this thing, that's awesome and they need to get paid. Yes, they do, but so do the mocap people and so do the mocap studio they rent and so does the translation and so does the people who are doing that over in like they're, when you, if you sit through the credits of a video game, they're not just putting those names on there because they had a tangential relation. Sometimes, like when you have a, you know, like the Sony suits on there or whatever, you know, it wasn't like Shuhei Yoshida was rolling up his sleeves and cracking the atom over there. But like when you get into the localization, when you get into the people who are working in other territories, when you get into things like games are this giant thing. And again, this is the hard pill to swallow of this article. Like, I'm not saying every game. I'm not saying every indie should be that much, right? Like, this is what we're talking about of exploring the scale and having all these different things. And you know, as much as you want to sit here and go, oh, 2K has so much money, maybe NBA 2K21 does cost that much and does need that much more. Now, granted, it's weird because they're the ones who are charging you the $100 to get the upgrade version, but put that aside for a second and like licensing and scans and all this other shit they're doing too. Like, there's so much going on in games these days that, yeah, it might be time for that to go up. And that, yeah, the games are, you know, with inflation and all this other shit, you know, cheaper than they've ever been or whatever. So they need to actually go through and commit to this to keep the art form going and have those AAA experiences be what we want them to be.
Greg, Harvey Colleen writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, are the economics of a game's target price more important to the industry than just the bottom line? I was listening to your discussion around the possible move to the from the $60 standard. Of course, as games get larger and more detailed, costing more development time and effort. Given that the $60 price point has stayed so long, do you think that it has, in order to remain at that point, spawned numerous innovations in game development? We have engines like the Unreal and Unity engines becoming more important tools for developers who can't justify the cost of making their own engine, yet at the same time, allowing more creators than ever who would never have been able to develop one into the ecosystem. It seems that a fixed price point isn't just a tug of war between consumers and developers around value and cost, but also a driver of important advances that can have an overall positive impact. You say that game prices can start more accurately reflecting cost, but how might that affect further progression? Greg, I thought this was a very interesting question in the idea that like, yeah, because game prices haven't gone up, you've seen different innovations in the space because of that. My mind immediately goes to the Unreal Engine 5 reveal and like seeing takes from people reacting to it being like, oh yeah, some of the tools they showed there could rapidly quicken like the development process in terms of being able to, I remember the example they gave in the actual engine demo was the statue thing where
rather than have to make low poly models of this, you can make one that looks fucking awesome and then just span them out 500 across the thing.
Exactly. And things like that, I think could help quicken the development process to make things easier for developers. Do you buy this idea that because of the $60 standard price point, we're now like we've gotten innovations because of that?
I don't. I think that that's natural. That is a natural progression of industry. I think when you look at like when somebody comes along with a good idea and figures out a way to build a better mousetrap, I think people go that way. And I can't believe I'm referencing shit that is actually academic or from history, but like think of Henry Ford in the assembly line, right? Like that changed the way people made cars because, hey, that's a brilliant way to do this. And it's a way to optimize it way quicker. I think as video games were more, and I think if anything, you know, he's talking about, has the $60 price point spawned numerous innovations in game development? I would say no. What I think spawned numerous innovations in game development is the internet and the digital age and how easy it is to share and stream and do things and have it all over. I think when you're sitting there talking about some, you know, developer A in Poland in the late 90s, mid 90s, making a game on their own engine. They just made their own engine because they thought it was the way to do it. And over here, there's somebody else making it in their own engine there, and it was proprietary, and it was this, and you were exclusive, or you weren't owned, and you weren't doing this thing. Like, I think there was more of a let's get in there and do it and try to own it lock, stock, and barrel thing. I think it's a similar situation to, I think, back to my argument here, and I'm kind of getting all over the map, but it's the same argument of PlayStation, where it used to be, We want exclusive experiences. Let's buy developers. We will buy developers. They will make them for it. It'll be Sony first parties. And we've seen that fall away right now because it is smarter to go, you know what? Fuck, I don't want to buy 13 more developers. Instead, let's partner with Camouflage, have them make Iron Man VR. Let's partner with Bluepoint, have them make Demon's Souls remake. Let's, before we bought them, partner with Insomniac, have them make Spider-Man. Like, it is this thing where you can get the benefits without going through the thing. And I think that's just wising up to where we are and how you share information and how you go. And I think the fact that Epic was able to come out and be like, hey, and I don't even mean Unreal 5, I mean in general Unreal, make that and put it on the grand stage and have people go like, oh cool, that is a cool way to make games, and the way it's snowballed and gotten better and gotten everywhere, I think that's part of it. I think you talk about like, is the $6 what spawned the innovation here? No, it's the same way that PlayStation 4 isn't using a cell processor like PlayStation 3. Because for the longest thing, you'd think, all right, cool, we need to be doing something incredibly different to be the reason you'd buy this system. So PS3 is going to run on a cell processor. And everybody's like, that's complicated and fucked up and actually gets in our way. And PlayStation backs down and like, all right, cool, it's basically a PC. Like, everyone moving that way is trying to go the path of least resistance to not do this $6 price point as much as get their games out faster, get their games more profitable, get their games, you know, in a way that run better. I don't buy it that it's all because $60.
Yeah, I think for me, the $60 price point is a thing that is reflected mostly, if you want to talk about innovation, which I don't know if I'd call this innovation, I think it's reflected mainly in the ways we see monetization and the ways in which we see the evolution of games as a service and DLC and all that stuff play out over the last couple of generations. I think because of that $60 price point, that's probably why Star Wars Battlefront 2 was monetized the way it was. That's probably why we see games like, and I want to say that's why we see games like Destiny and Destiny 2 be monetized the way they are, but I think that would have happened regardless of the price point. I think the post-launch content and post-launch DLC and the post-launch process of season selling pass. Packs and selling season passes and selling battle passes, I think that's just natural to the to where video games have gone in general, to where the internet has come and that where that integration has gone over the years. I think that's a natural thing. I think the levels of it and the way that stuff is kind of measured out in terms of what we expect out of a battle pass, what we expect out of a season pass, I think that is reflected by the $60 price point. And maybe going up to $70 means that we see that stuff kind of lean back and come down a bit. You don't think so, Greg?
Not a chance in hell, dude. We let the genie out of the bottle and he is not going back in. I'm sorry. And again, this is the problem, is that I think, and I shouldn't say problem, but it's part of the argument we're having. That's a fun video gamer argument, right? But it is also trying to wake people up to the realities. Go back to the article itself, right? Quote, even with the increase to $69.99 for next gen, the price increase from 2005 to 2020 next gen is only up 17%, far lower than other comparisons. Like, this doesn't solve the problem. It makes the financials better, but it doesn't solve the problem people are having in making these giant games. And yes, I do agree with you that the fact that we were stuck at $60 price point did become of shit. How do we keep monetizing? What do we keep doing? And it was this, people love DLC. They love all these different things. Why not start attaching? I think one of the, you know, overlooked examples that I think is a great example of it is Assassin's Creed. And I'll use Odyssey, even though it's been there before. But Assassin's Creed Odyssey, right? Like, outside of the season pass, outside of the DLC, like, episode of Atlantis or the Hidden Blade stuff, Legacy of the First Blade. They also have like the costumes in there of like, buy a Helix pack and buy this suit of armor and this thing and look like that and make your horse look like this. Like, they're microtransactioning that to hell, not in an egregious, we're dirty, at least in the Greg Miller sense, dirty way. It isn't a way of like, hey, put out Odyssey. We didn't put out another Assassin's Creed the next year. We know you're still playing this because it's so huge and there's so much content. And if you love it that much, hopefully you'll buy this suit. But like, that's not going away. As games get bigger and they want you to still be committed to these games, like, don't for a second think if Valhalla next gen comes out at $70, you're going to get everything for free. Like, no. Oh, yeah, and I don't think you'd ever see, I don't think you'll see it slow down, because it also mutated along the way where it went from, all right, cool, I'm playing Prince of Persia on PS3 and now what the fuck, the DLC is the actual ending and I have to pay for it again. Fuck off. Right. Fortnite and the battle passes, and you know, in general, like games like The Division or Destiny or whatever, which are, hey, you're coming back to this game day after day, night after night, week after week. Like, we want you to be able to buy stuff to support it, but then also you want to get something out of it, right? Like, I just, this is a walk, but stick with me. Today, you know, I just put up the video over on my Twitter. There's the Greg Miller / Kind of Funny Easter egg in Iron Man VR. I put that up and then made a joke about being in the Avengers as well. And somebody responded to it with my tweet of like, I'll buy all the skins in that, when I said that watching the Avengers thing, right? And I still feel that way of like, if I get into Avengers and like Avengers and want to play Avengers, if they keep putting out cool Cap skins and Iron Man skins, I'm going to be like, yeah, sure. Here's $5. Here's $5. They fucking, I haven't played Fortnite in 2 seasons, right? But they put out a Captain America thing. I'm like, motherfucker, go buy it. And I know I'm going to play to get the Aquaman thing. Like, I personally look at that and don't say, look at these thieving bastards. I look at them and go, man, awesome for putting something I care about in that game that you are still doing, that I could still play for free, that I could run around in a default skin and fuck around with. Like, this is the push and pull, but I've seen people in the chat and in comments and all this, like, if they go to $70, fine, but they better dial down microtransactions. Not a fucking chance. You know what I mean? Go ahead and hold your breath. I'll see you in the hospital.
I do think the one thing is there is going to be that push and pull with the audience. And I think in the end, I could very well see companies winning that push and pull of like, okay, yeah, you guys are 100%. Mad, but we still got your money.
This is exactly what we're always talking about. It's back to my Epic Game Store argument of like, everyone was so up in arms for 6 months about it, probably 3 months about it, and then it just became the thing, and now nobody ever talks about it. Nobody gives a shit. It's the same thing here, where people are going to be mad that it's $70, then they'll get over it. Then the first egregious NBA 2K 2020 or 2K 22 will come out, and it'll be, I'm just talking about future one though, the first egregious microtransaction, whatever the hell, buy gold currency to fucking change your, I don't even, bow color, it'll come out and everybody will be like, oh my god, it's, and then
bow
it'll
color
like,
in NBA 2K,
yeah, oh, you didn't like know that NBA 2K 2020, or it's kind of, I can't say it because it's NBA 2K 22, yeah, they're gonna have bows in it, yeah. big deal. There's a
basketball
whole mini game.
When it comes
there's
back.
A mini game where Larry Bird tries to drain 3-pointers, and then when he misses, you shoot him with the bow. That's the mini game. You're not actually shooting the shots. You're shooting Larry Bird.
You're shooting the misses. Damn. Coronavirus has changed basketball as well.
It's like rock and jock now.
Greg, these next three stories are going to be some quick ones. This next story is actually a very sad one. Story number 5, popular Twitch streamer Byron Reckful Bernstein dies at 31. This is Elise Schaefer at Variety. Byron Reckful Bernstein, a popular video game streamer on Twitch, has died, according to social media posts from his ex-girlfriends and brother. He was 31. According to Blue Midrigal, his ex-girlfriend, and one of the people who initially confirmed his death on social media, Bernstein died by suicide. Bernstein went by the name Reckful on Twitch, where he was best known for his World of Warcraft streams and had over 936,000 followers. Most recently, Bernstein had been working as a developer on his own video game, Everland, which was set to release later this year. Greg, this is a sad story that I saw blowing up on Twitter. And this is one of the ones where I wasn't really familiar with who Reckful was, but
yeah, me either.
You know, read through the story and was very saddened to see that he was this huge Twitch streamer and, yeah, like, died by suicide in a way that I think is a reminder, like, in the same way that any company can be corrupted you know, whatever might be going on there, in the same way anybody can be going through problems, anybody can be going through depression, anybody can be struggling. And so to that, like, you have a good post that you put up on the forums, Frego, saying that you're not allowed to kill yourself, and I don't know if you want to like expand on that at all, but
yeah, I mean,
it's very much like echo that.
You know, on Wednesday, I think it was, nanobiologist wrote in with a squad up that was also about a different video game personality streamer who themselves. And it's the idea that, yeah, like, if you ever need to hear it, you matter. You know what I mean? You matter to someone. You're not allowed to kill yourself because, like, that's a selfish move. And I understand you're in a bad place. I understand you're thinking about that. But reach out and talk to somebody, whether it is the suicide prevention hotline, whether it is someone in your friend group, whether it is your family, like, no matter how dark it seems, there's always, and I think that the post you're talking about that we put up, and I know it's since been down because the forums are down, but it's then resurrected itself on Reddit. It's not like meant to be confrontational. It's just meant to give you the hard truth that you're not allowed to kill yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, people care about you. You are loved, whether it is, you know, your best friend on the internet who talks to you about video game today, which is a legit relationship. Like, you can't do that. You have to try. You know what I mean? And I know that's hard to hear. And I feel like people don't hear it. But I know the fact that that letter has been brought up to me so many times, whether it be at meet and greets or emails, or usually when somebody's hugging me at a meet and greet, they whisper it in my ear. That helped them. And so I know that it helps people. And so I need people who are listening to this to know that. And I'm not saying that it's easy. And I'm not saying that you're weak for not feeling like this. And I'm just saying that you're not allowed to kill yourself. You have to exhaust every fucking opportunity before I want you to even think about that. And I assure you, you have not exhausted every opportunity to do that yet.
Story number 6. My friend Pedro is getting a TV adaptation. This is Rebecca Valentine at GamesIndustry.biz, who GamesIndustry.biz is having a pretty good episode.
Rebecca Valentine is having a pretty good one.
Yeah, Rebecca Valentine is killing it. So shout out to Rebecca Valentine. Dead Toast Entertainment Shoot 'Em Up, My Friend Pedro is getting a TV adaptation through a collaboration with Legendary Television, 87 North, and DJ2 Entertainment. The project is planned as a half-hour R-rated dramedy and will be led by John Wick writer and creator Derek Kolsted as both writer and executive producer. He'll be joined by John Wick co-director David Leitch, who has also worked on Atomic Blonde and Deadpool 2, and who'll serve as executive producer. Very exciting stuff. I played My Friend Pedro.
Yeah.
Didn't really like it. So My Friend Pedro was a game I was really looking forward to, because from that first trailer, I was like, this is a me-ass game. I love the style. I love the humor. I like that Hotline Miami style, like, or not even Hotline Miami style, but like the arcade-y shoot 'em up, like, you know, ridiculous, everything's blowing up, that type of arcade indie game. That's my jam. Give all of them to me. And once I played it, I was like, all right, this is all right. Like, the controls are kind of janky. The gameplay wasn't as interesting to me. The characters and the wackiness I dug. And so I think to that I'll say I'm excited for this TV adaptation, if this actually does come to fruition, because this sounds like something that actually won't make it to actual screens. But if it does, I'm gonna watch it, because I do love the world. I do love the wackiness. I do love the humor there, and I think there's something there if you want to make a TV show out of My Friend Pedro. So I'll be looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see what happens with it. I was the same boat where I played My Friend Pedro at preview events, and I was like, "Ooh, this doesn't feel great for me. Like, I'm not sure I'd actually dig this." And I want to say we got codes. I was reviewing something else, and then Barrett played it. And I remember him coming back being like, I was really excited for it, and it just didn't do it for me. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I never bothered going back.
It was also like during this spree of Devolver Digital games that were of somewhat of a similar style, because I think before that we had gotten Katana Zero, and we had gotten Ape Out, and we had gotten Gato Roboto, and those were all games that I played. And I was like, these are game of the year level for me. I'm absolutely loving all these games. And then you have to play... to play My Friend Pedro, I was like, okay, well, you gotta miss at some point. No offense to My Friend Pedro, but it just was not for me. And then our last story number 7, we might have been spot on with Giancarlo Esposito being the next Far Cry villain. This is Sheriff Saeed at VG247. According to a report from Game Reactor, Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul's Giancarlo Esposito is playing a role in the upcoming Far Cry 6. Game Reactor's article has since been taken down, but in a captured screenshot, they talk about the rumors or whatever, not even the rumor, the report that Esposito said he was playing a character in a game. Game Reactor says, now he doesn't say anything about what it is or who's developing it, but please allow me to spoil that for you. It's Far Cry 6. With Ubisoft Forward being just 10 days away, we probably won't have to wait long to see him in action either. And it'll be interesting to see the results of this new technology and approach. And so there you go. I'm also going to say, maybe take that with a grain of salt.
This article was deleted.
Yeah, this article from Game Reactor, which I'd never heard of Game Reactor, which was also deleted.
I've heard of
them. Okay, so you're familiar with Game Reactor.
Yeah.
But it was deleted. I will say there was also a kind of a hint, kind of a tease, but kind of like not a tease from VentureBeat. Jeffy Grub, is that what we call him?
No, it's Jeffy Grub.
He also kind of teased that, like, oh yeah, this is probably a Far Cry game. But,
well, he said that on Twitter yesterday, and then I saw this. You're right, in the Games Daily thing, Imran published it today, right? Of where it was, that Jeffy Grub, who hasn't updated his byline, it still reads incorrectly as Jeff Grub on GameSpeed over here.
Fortunate.
Breaking Bad star. And you said it's G. What is it? How do I say it?
Giancarlo. I mean, that's how I say. It. I probably have it spot like
Giancarlo Esposito has to be the next Far Cry villain, right? And then it's just like, Yeah, it's just Jeff Grubb being like, come on, it's got to be. It's Far Cry, right? I mean, I don't know for sure. Ubisoft hasn't even confirmed a Far Cry yet, but the publisher has the next entry in the open world map exploration game in the works. It's part of the, here's the thing. And then he goes, here's why he makes sense for Far Cry. Well, no shit, Jeffy. You know what I mean? Come on, we understand why it makes sense. Jeffy Grubb probably has inside information. He's doing this Sushi X kind of bullshit where he's like, oh, I'm going to act like I don't know, but I know, all right? And I got long hair. So it's probably him, and that's probably what it is.
So you buy it. Oh, your thing unplugged. Oh, no. Greg's doing that. While Greg's doing that, I might transition to do the ad because we're getting very late in the show. And so I'm gonna put a pin in that. Greg, keep the do you buy it question in your mind right after the ad because I'm going to ask you. But as that's happening, of course, Kind of Funny Games Daily, you can get the show ad-free by going to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Brooke Lennon. Did you know that making small changes to your everyday life can lead to huge positive changes to your lifestyle? The right towel turns a bathroom into a spa. The right loungewear turns function into luxury. The right bedding turns a bed into a retreat. You know Brooke Lennon as the internet's favorite sheets, but they're also home to bedding, loungewear, towels, and more with over 50,000 plus five-star reviews and counting. Kind of Funny loves Brooke Lennon. They're luxury products at a low price, and Tim loves that he can get the right colors to match his room. Brooke Lennon was the first direct-to-consumer bedding company. They worked directly with manufacturers and directly with customers. No middlemen, just a great product and service. All luxury products without the luxury markup. Brooklinen.com is the perfect place to start making small changes that make big differences. Brooke Lennon is so confident in their products that all their sheets, comforters, loungewear, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. Go on, make yourself comfortable. Get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use promo code GAMES only at brooklinen.com. Brooke Lennon, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. Greg, do you buy that Giancarlo Esposito is the next Far Cry villain?
Yeah, sure, why not? I think it's either got to be that or it's got to be a Call of Duty. I'm not putting the guy down. I guess he's in Payday, but I feel like, you know, we for a name that big, you know what I mean? And he's talking about it being a big, crazy game with new acting or whatever. Makes sense to me.
I think it's going to be in the next Breath of the Wild, too. That's my guess. Huh? Put it in the bank. Link, that's my guess. Up. Take it to the bank. Greg.
I don't have a Giancarlo Esposito impression. As I went to Link get up, I'm trying to think of how does Gus talk in Breaking Bad?
Sell the meth. I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen Breaking Walter. Bad.
Sell the meth, Link.
It's been a long week.
It has been a long week, Greg. I'm really excited to see who Giancarlo is actually playing in whatever video game he's playing in, but that's so far away. If I want to know what's coming to Mom and Grop shops today, where'd I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today, we got Clash Force for Xbox One and Switch, Demolish and Build for Xbox One, Marvel's Iron Man VR for PSVR, Alphadia Genesis for Xbox One, Singled Out for Switch, Infinity for Switch, Ghost Grab 3000 for Switch, Monster Blast for PC, and then Unicorn Dream for PC. New dates. Horizon Zero Dawn Complete Edition is coming to PC.
Who would have predicted it?
Epic Game Store on August 7th. Who would have thought? Not me.
Worst kept secret.
Not me. We all knew this was happening. Blazing Deserts, the new DLC for the acclaimed tactical RPG Battle Brothers, will be released on August 13th for $14.99. And then Overcooked 2's brand new seasonal Suns Out Buns Out DLC is out on PC with a console release following later this month. And then Wit writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, Hades from Supergiant Update. Hey, y'all. Just wanted to shout this out because y'all haven't mentioned this announcement on KFGD. Supergiant, one of the best game developers working today, announced last week that Hades is exiting early access and will have a 1.0 launch this year. And Greg Kasavin announced that they're currently figuring out what platforms to bring it to. Greg, call Shu and get him on this. After making my favorite game of all time with Pyre, I just want to blast the horns for Hades, which takes Supergiant back to their action roots with Bastion, as they move into the roguelite genre and also tell their biggest story yet. I'm actually really excited for Hades. I really want to play it. I'm looking forward to it. I love me a roguelite.
When it's awesome, and that's said from day one of it, because I downloaded the Epic Game Store back to play it, and when it dropped and screw around with it, and I was playing, I was like, I gotta stop because I want this to come to console. So hold on.
Are you calling Shoe?
I'm making some moves over here. Don't worry about it. I'm making Greg Miller money move.
Should I move on to the next thing, or should I?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, I'll interrupt you if I have anything I have to do.
Please do. Now it's time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to get your questions read on the show, just like Dale. Dale writes in and says, now that we're a good way through the E3 replacement summer, I'm curious how the numerous... Let me start that over again, because this is written in an interesting way. Now that we're a good way through the E3 replacement summer, I'm curious how the number of showcases affected outlets like Kinda Funny. Has more opportunities for impressions, reactions, and spread out news had a noticeable effect on views or traffic for Kinda Funny over previous years? This is like a Greg and Tim question. It might even be more so a Tim question, but Greg, do you have any input on this? I know Tim is like the numbers guy.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I've been lucky enough to be employed by Tim here at Kinda Funny long enough that I know the numbers as well. Dale, so yeah, we just did a Gamescast, obviously, where we talk about this, and we talk about it being spread out and exhausting and all this other stuff. But that was, you're right, more about like us as content creators and making the stuff and yada, yada, yada. And for this, you're asking this, a great question of how the showcases affected us. I would say across the board, our content is doing better because of it. I think you know normally for us, E3 week is this, man, everything's, you know, you watch Games Daily, you watch the other shows, you watch Gamescast, you see the numbers we're usually getting. E3 usually spikes them up into, you know, the 100,000 range, which is crazy, or at least, you know, the 75,000, which is just outstanding numbers for a site like ours, or a YouTube site like ours. Podcast is a different story. Anyways, though, E3 week usually brings that on really hard, and it's awesome, and then it goes super quiet. So the fact that it's spread out is actually keeping numbers higher. I think Games Dailies are performing better because there's more stuff going on. Also, Last of Us is in the middle of this, which is just juggernaut numbers right now for us. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, the reaction streams, those archived on YouTube do really well. The post shows do really well on YouTube and the podcast stuff. So we are seeing noticeable upward trends on this as it is more extended out. So it's hard to say because I guess it isn't hard to say. Kinda Funny as a company and YouTube video brand, right, is doing better because of this elongated E3. Because we would have these kind of numbers on the E3 videos that we would be doing during E3. However, we wouldn't be doing as many. We wouldn't be as reacting to as many showcases. We wouldn't be as doing as many post shows. We wouldn't be doing as many first impressions. Like, the fact that it's spread out actually does give us a whole bunch of work on this.
So what you're saying is that this should last forever. We should keep doing it this way.
I mean, I prefer
company
not.
Shouldn't change.
People should change. They should evolve. You know, do those different things.
Oh no, what's happening? What's this? I'm fully expecting Shuhei Yoshida.
Hello.
So you know.
Hello, Greg Kasavin from Supergiant. This is Greg Miller from Kinda Funny Games Daily. How are you?
Hey, how's it going? I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm a little bit angry, but I'll get to it in a second, Greg. So you're live on the air right now, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. You can't sue us now that you know. A listener named Wit wrote in, and Wit was saying about, hey, there's a Hades update from Supergiant. Basically, that you said that you're going to be exiting early access and we'll have a 1.0 launch this year, and that you announced they are currently figuring out what platforms to bring it to. Is this accurate?
That is indeed accurate.
Yes. How are you figuring it out? This game is great, and it needs to be on the PlayStation 4 with a very good platinum trophy. All right, I don't want a bad platinum trophy. I want a very good platinum trophy. You can't hear Blessing. He's on the show, but he's in another room, obviously. He says PlayStation 5. That's a great point, Blessing. Good point. So who do I need to set you up with? I thought you knew everyone at PlayStation. What do you need from me?
We know people. It's just...
You're acting like you don't. You're acting like you don't online.
There are many considerations, especially as a small little run-of-the-mill independent game team, because it's a ton of work, sadly, to bring our games to different platforms. So we have to be real careful about figuring out which ones in what order and that sort of thing. We've always had to make decisions like that, and they're like some of the most painful decisions we have to make, because we would love our games to just instantly be available like in all the places people want to play them. But the reality is like, it's hard for us to pull that off.
Sure.
Kind of physically. So that's kind of the reason we haven't committed to anything just yet.
That's fair. I'm not going to lie.
We've been,
Not gonna lie, I'm not gonna lie. This is a very jokey segment that you gave a super serious answer to it. Yeah. No, no, I'm glad. Now I'm turning. Now I'm turning off the Greg character and just being the Greg Miller host personality guy. No, that's a great answer, and I totally understand that.
Yeah, people get super fired up about this stuff, right? So yeah, I can't help but take it seriously because I know how much it means to people, and it means a lot to us too. But yeah, like we're definitely thinking about all the. It's awesome that people want this game and in different places like PS4 and PS5 for that matter, as you mentioned. So we're thinking about all our options.
Okay. All options are on the table. I got
figure
you.
It out.
Well, Greg, Hades is fantastic, and no matter where you put it, I'll play it.
Oh, thanks so much, man. It's good to hear from you. Thank you for calling.
Oh, anytime. You know, yeah, it's that thing. You know, I only call my friends when I'm on the air. So you're good. Everything's good. You're okay.
Yeah. No, we're doing good. We're glad to still be able to make progress and work on this game every day. People are really digging it. So it's I count my blessings.
Awesome. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Take care, man. Right, bye.
You can't joke around. Greg's too serious. He's too good of a guy. You call him, you're going to give a jokey thing. Like Pete Hines, jokey answers yesterday. No big deal. Let me tell you the business. And I'm like, oh shit.
I was playing to like joke around and being like, okay, what are these indie developers gonna act like? They don't have all the money in the world. They released Bastion Pyre, but then when you got into a serious answer, I was like, okay, no, that makes sense. I understand.
Yeah, we're sorry. Please get back to making your game. We're sorry. Take care.
Please, I apologize for bothering you or even thinking about bothering you. Now it's time to squad up. You can of course write into patreon.com. So it's kind of funny games to squad up. You want to play games with other people in the community, just like Scott Butterworth did. Scott Butterworth wrote in with the squad up on PC and says, during these quarantine times, I've been working 50 to 60 hour weeks for the post office. Starting tonight, I've got a week long staycation, and Mrs. Butterworth gave me the go ahead to play video games until my eyes fall out. With that in mind, I'm looking for some help in GTA 5. I've always wanted to get into it, but I've never had a crew. I'd love to have some best friends show me the ropes and run some heists and have some laughs. You can add Scott Butterworth on Steam through the username Scotty McButters. That is Scotty McButters, all lowercase. I don't know if that matters for Steam, but if it does, Scotty McButters, all lowercase, all one word.
Now I want to point out that we know a Scott Butterworth, right, in the industry who works with us on the Borderlands show. And I was like, oh man, that's awesome. Is this him? And then it gets to, I work in the post office. Like, oh no, not you.
Oh, it's not him. Okay. I mean, it might be like a double, might be smart.
Hey man, after my long day at 2K, you know what I love to do? Wind down at my second job at the post office.
Deliver some mail. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. We write in, let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong. And I don't know if my eyes deceive me, Greg, but it looks like you're wrong is empty.
Yeah,
you see this?
No, I went through. Rand M wrote in with one that was more editorializing, so I got that crap out of here, and then that's pretty much been it.
Wow, your hosts for next week are as follows: Monday it's Tim and Emron, Tuesday it's me and Emron, Wednesday it's Greg and Gary, Thursday it's Greg and me, and then Friday it's me and Greg. We're reunited again. Thursday, Fridays, your blessing, Greg days. Get hype! Look forward to that. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, wear your masks.
Yes.